Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, you want to know in terms of how my growing up contributed to what? Okay. Oh, that's juicy. Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Maryland. It's a suburb of Washington, D.C., and has since become much more sophisticated. But I was living in like a lower middle class neighborhood, which was almost exclusively Catholic, you know, and therefore, well, not necessarily therefore, but white. And my family is Armenian. And I was a real dark little kid, and a whole lot of where I'm coming from is the fact that I'm this ethnic woman, and that I went through a whole lot of shit, you know, because of that. No. Armenian is its own religion as well as nationality. So, for instance, I'm especially getting in touch with that now in what I'm writing. I'm doing, like, I have just written a song called Rainbow Woman, which is talking about that experience of being not quite white, not black, somewhere in between, and what that does to my whole perspective and my lifestyle. But even more than that, without writing specifically about that, it totally affects my writing. For instance, I think you can really, really see a difference in the way I sing, the chords I use, and the degree to which I make use of emotion in my writing, as opposed to white women. I think white women are, as a rule, less in touch with really strong emotion, or at least expressing that musically, and that's why you'll see Laura Nyro kind of belting it out, or black women, of course, have their own mode of expression that relates to their experience, whereas, you know, Linda Ronstadt sings nice, but you're not going to get, you know, Poverty Train out of her, you know? So, you know, I think that's something really to be perceptive to in my writing is, you know, that aspect of where it's coming from. What else can I say?
What's happening musically in the background of your parents' musicians?
Oh, no, my parents never played music. And, I mean, we didn't have, you know, they never listened to records. They never listened to anything, pretty much, except my mother is a really great singer. And she used to perform for the kids in the neighborhood. She would sit there singing Lulu's Back in Town, you know, and all the kids would say, oh, yay, you know. That's the extent of my musical background. I never had any training. What happened was my parents bought a piano when I was 3, and I just sat down to it and started whipping out these tunes. And, you know, it's like the one thing, when my mother was doing housework, she'd play, you know, some tacky radio station, and, you know, I would just imitate whatever I heard, and I just, you know, which got pretty bizarre, because I really loved some classical music when I was real, real little. Since then, I'm more sophisticated, but when I was little, I really liked this stuff, and I used to figure out how to play, like, Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata by ear and stuff, because reading music was something really foreign. It still is, but
you learn by ear?
Yeah, completely. Well, they tried to stick me in group piano, but it drove me bananas, because the teacher would play the piece at the beginning of the class. Okay, this is what we're going to learn this week, and I would already know it from hearing it. And then she would get really angry at me because she'd notice eventually that I wasn't looking at the music. And it was a mess because I was playing these little boogie-woogie tunes with both hands, and they put me in this class and expected me to play Mary Had a Little Lamb. And it didn't work. So that's why I can read music just barely, because of that. But I mean, that they put me there, but I didn't last long enough to be able to do it well or anything.
You're a child prodigy at 3.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that.
Okay, so you were into music right from the beginning, and then when did you become a performer? When did you decide that performance is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I did music just all the time when I was young, and then I guess...
Did you sing along with that, or were you just playing at that
point? Oh, singing, yeah. I did most of my singing on the swing set, and playing was just playing piano. I never thought about that before, but yeah, it was only when I was probably about 10 or 11, which is really old, Yeah, for me, I think of that, that's adulthood as far as I'm concerned. That I started doing pop tunes. No, maybe it was younger than that, probably 9. I started doing, you know, Dionne Warwick songs or something, so that I was singing and playing. But anyway, I started, my first concert, I think, was when I was 13. And that's not counting the church picnic. And that was, you know, at a coffee house. And then I just played it whenever I could, which was...
coffee house at 13?
Yeah. Yeah, that was... there was a local, you know, Unitarian church that had a real nice, whatever, auditorium. And it was a... But it was a real hot shit kind of coffee house. I mean, they had real good bands and folk performers there all the time. So it was kind of hot. Yeah. And then, you know, I just played. Occasionally I played at a club in Baltimore. The first time I got paid was in Baltimore. I played when I was 15. And they all, and it was really degrading in many ways to be that young, because the primary reason I couldn't make it at that age had nothing to do with my talent or anything else. It had to do with the fact that I was this punk, you know, and ageism dictates that a 14-year-old girl, no matter how talented, is, oh, isn't she cute, you know, and not to be taken seriously. So I was doing, I was always political. I mean, the very first song I wrote was, you know, basically a protest tune, and, you know, love songs interspersed, but as far as performing is concerned, it began pretty young.
Were you writing your own stuff?
Yeah. That coincided. I started thinking of my music as a career at the same time that I started writing music. So I would, you know, I was shy about doing my own stuff, and I didn't have a huge repertoire, of course. But, you know, I would do at least 3 of my songs in a performance, and then all the other big...
You never had a problem thinking of your music as an avocation?
Oh, you mean because of female conditioning?
Yeah.
No, that didn't occur to me. I mean, I suppose because in my family, my sister was sort of crazy, and who was older than me. My brother, who was younger, was, you know, a real dummy. So,
well, this plays on your tape.
Yeah, I'm saying from my father's perspective. Okay, this is from my father's perspective. And so I guess normally where, I mean, my mother, of course, encouraged us all to be whatever we wanted to be for the most part, but where normally maybe a father would have been real heavy-handed about saying, be feminine, I think he encouraged me to do a lot of things that were not feminine because he knew from a very young age that I had a whole lot of talent, a lot of brains, and if he wanted to get his... status up as far as my kids are great at things, it was going to be through me. And so, you know, here I was getting straight A's and playing the piano at 3. So he said, all right, let her do it, you know. And I guess that's where that might come from, is that it wasn't repressed in the sense of my being female. It was repressed for other reasons. I mean, my parents are still saying, Sally, when are you going to get a government job, you know?
How old are you now?
I'm 22.
You've been performing almost 10 years.
Yeah. Really, and I haven't gotten anywhere, you know.
I've heard it.
Yeah.
Okay, we can go either into women's music now, or do you want anything else on that?
Yeah, I feel like something's unfinished about that.
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
Okay, as a performer, take it, you know, what's happened to you?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Okay, so there I was, a young, artsy-fartsy, folky, suburban girl. I guess I started writing more, you know, I got more strength in what I was saying and more direction. I got into the women's movement, the bowel movement, when I was, let's see, right? You're going to have to edit that out? Okay. I got involved in the women's movement when I was in 10th grade. I guess that means I was about, what, 16? And so that's, you know, naturally I began writing about that. I wasn't in the movement in terms of nobody knew me. You know, I was just real isolated, living in my parents' house in suburbia and writing these songs, you know, feminist songs. The very first one I wrote was just is a song called Cora. Oh, you've heard that one. That's on the tape. Because what had happened is I went to a consciousness-raising meeting, and these women said, when they found out I was a musician, they just seized upon me, and they said, you have to write feminist music. I said, what are you talking about? Look, you know, I mean, I write music. What? How can that? I couldn't even comprehend. And I had this terrible image of these really awful songs about diapers and washing dishes and just this real tacky stuff. Yeah, exactly. And it was like, I felt almost like affronted because, you know, I was an artist and I couldn't ruin my art with this mundane garbage. But I also was a very strong feminist and knew that it was important, but I just couldn't imagine how to do it. So my first attempt was to write about a woman who's strong and beautiful in that. And, you know, so it was just a beginning. But from there, I've really, I think, gotten really good at knowing how to write about it, getting in touch with it in different ways to express it that aren't tacky, you know. Oh, yeah, performing. So I played coffee houses as my music became less folky and more rock-oriented and more jazzy. I played in a number of groups with men, always with men. They were the musicians that were around at the time. And then I started playing clubs in D.C. We were a house band for a while at one of these clubs. And I thought I was really starting to make the big time here. I was making $150 a week, you know, which is big, big money. I'm not doing that well now. And I wasn't living at home anymore, but when I'd go visit my mother, she'd still say, when are you going to get a government job? Meanwhile, it was getting more and more horrible to work with men in the band. And I was still straight, but more and more radical feminist. And
playing your music or everybody's music?
Playing mine primarily. Because club gigs meant doing like four sets a night, and because playing to a bunch of beer drinkers isn't the best place to do women's music, of course we did a lot of, you know, other people's stuff. But I got away with some real strange songs. For instance, the one song I have, Power Man's Music, mm-hmm. Which is precisely about these men, you know, and their real horrible music. But I would play it for these same people in these clubs, and the amazing thing is they'd all put down their beers and listen. You know, they'd be making noise and they'd quiet down, they'd get into the song and they'd just hoot and holler. They loved it. It was so weird. And, you know, but it was terrible. I should have been singing it to them in the first place, but that's what was happening at the time. And so it just, you know, eventually my politics led me to, you know, getting more and more fed up with men in general. Doing music with them was really horrible, and after I got out of it, I realized how much it had affected me that I hadn't realized. For instance, when you asked if there may be a difference between women's music, meaning heterosexual women's music, as opposed to lesbian music, I would say definitely yes, because in my own life I found that no matter how strong a feminist I was, no matter how respected or encouraged as a musician I was, my music always suffered from a certain passivity that when I came out suddenly just disappeared. My piano playing became more aggressive. There's just a sureness and a strength there that was a little bit just really under wraps when I was straight and always looking for male approval and never really getting it because no matter how good you were good for a girl. And, you know, that was the comment. I played at the cellar door once with this guy I used to play with. Oh, he's a star now. I should say his name. He and I played together and all these people came up afterwards and said how much they liked us and everything. And all these men, you know, the first thing they would say is, wow, can you play guitar for a chick? You know, and that was just the comment that it was crystallized in my mind, because that was the comment I got every single time. It was just, you know, too much after a while. So, you know, after I was involved with women, I still played mixed audiences for a really long time, and now it's really important to me to play for women only, and it's hard as hell to be able to do that because there isn't a lot of support for it, but that's where I'm at now. Yeah. Yeah, but even within the women's community, a lot of people, a lot of women, are critical of or non-supportive of women-only concerts, which surprises me, because even if they are not separatist, I know that they all enjoy women's space. And
it works the reverse, too. Mardi Gras does closed and open concerts.
Yeah.
Has the support withdrawn from her from closed concerts because she's doing open.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you can win on that one.
It's a very...
a little following.
Yeah.
Which remind me to bring up the nightclub later on.
Oh, okay.
Okay, do you play with a group now, or do you want to play with a group now?
No, I used...
How do you describe your music now, too?
Okay, I've always had this raging battle within myself to be a soloist or to play with a group. I think, especially in women's music, it's important for women to play together, for people to not see this individual star up there being a prodigy or an exception, but rather to see 10 women up there at once saying, we can all do it, it's within us all. Look how we can work together, you know. And I think I still have a dream of this ultimate high of my women's band that's just going to have every instrument and, you know, every kind of woman in the world up there, hopefully a few 5-year-olds and 80-year-olds and just everyone, all being so damn competent and so loving and so real with their music that, you know, all you can do is go crazy when you see them. And, you know, that's something I still hold on to, but it's just real impractical, it's, at least now. I was performing with a woman named Shelley Jennings, who's just a real, real great guitar player. She and I grew up together, came out together, and did, you know, really good music together, but working the band just has a whole lot of hassles inherent in it, and I found that for now, anyway, I've just got to do my solo thing until I find just the right people. Also, it's the combination of people. Playing just with Shelley, it was really kind of imbalanced. I ran into problems because on stage, Shelley's very quiet and small and blonde, and I'm very, you know, here I am, this dark, aggressive, meanie, you know, Armini. And I would get shit after concerts because she didn't sing or she didn't write songs and she didn't talk on stage, and people thought that I was telling her she wasn't allowed to, you know. And it's like, you know, and if they would say it to me, it would have been easy to deal with because I could have explained, well, no, this is just, you know. But, you know, I would just hear these things behind my back, and it just was a real drag. So a lot of times women are critical of performers without knowing what's going on behind the scenes, you know. And they can't expect every member in a band to be as aggressive, as creative, or, you know, as any other member of the band. And yet I have seen performers, especially in the regular music business, you know, we've all heard stories about so-and-so forces her or his musicians to James Brown, for instance, if anyone makes a mistake on stage, they're fired completely. I mean, one wrong note and they're out. Or, you know, ego trips that performers are on where they won't let someone who has a dynamite voice sing in the band. But I'm not into that at all. I mean, I'm always looking, oh, you can sing? Come on, you know, get out there. But, you know, a lot of times women assume the worst, and that's really unfair, I think.
How do you describe your music now? You know, is there a difference between, there is a difference between the tape I have and your music.
Yeah, my music is more me and less worrying about what people are going to think. That's always been there to a degree, but I think that's on the increase. Even very recently, like in the past month, it's become more so. where I write a song, it's not in reference to anyone else. It's just, here I am, this is what I feel, rather than, I know what you think, but let me say what I think anyway. Right. Also, the difference is that I'm writing for myself in the sense of writing for my people. When I was writing feminist music when I was straight, I was still writing with the idea in mind that it was accessible to the average male or accessible to the average, you know, schmuck. Whereas now, I think that my role is not to convince or manipulate anyone into believing what I believe, but rather to state really strongly and really truthfully what I am and how I do think that is healthy and good, and that if that is alienating to anyone, then that's fine, because for men, I don't have any interest in them hearing it anyway, and for women, it's they're going to go through their changes at their own speed in their own lifetime, you know, based on their reality. And if they come into the space that I'm in and they can get behind what I'm saying, then that's wonderful. But until that time, you know, I'm not trying to suck anybody in. And I don't believe in that anymore, you know. So.
Okay. You can go out of two ways right now.
Mm-hmm.
Either getting into what's women's music, or since you were talking about your music, of how you take a song through its steps, kind of how it comes about.
Yeah. Oh, might as well do that. That's the tough one. You mean just really structuring the song, or why I write it?
Okay. How you write, first of all. Mm-hmm. Do you sit down and really struggle with it? Does it just pop out?
Mm-hmm.
You know? When you're writing, are you, especially since you're going through the changes in the music,
mm-hmm.
are you conscious of the fact of, do the lyrics just flow, or do you have to struggle with them because mm-hmm. of your own socialization of trying to fit them back to where you're really trying to think?
Mm-hmm.
On the form, do you take it where it naturally goes because that's the way you've learned it, or do you pull back and say, no, it'd be more interesting here,
mm-hmm.
I can't go too far because I lose the audience? I mean, you know.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Okay. I think I write in several different ways. There are songs that come to me in a flash. There are songs that I write because it's something, it's an idea that's important to me that needs expressing,
mm-hmm.
and I get myself to write a song about it. For the most part, I always write, it's always the music that gives me lyrics. I'll sit down and I'll play a chord, or a chord progression, usually with some kind of trill that really interests me in my right hand, and then I'll, you know, just start improvising a melody above it. And usually the best songs, and in most of my songs though, those melodies start telling me words. My mouth just starts forming syllables, and then I've got the basis of the song. And it's like the music is communicating this to me. It's real. That's why one of the reasons I tend to think of my music as a real spiritual thing. And I feel like sometimes I'm the vessel for these great things that are coming through me. I have also found that when I'm writing, it's coming from this deeper part of me that can never be phony or superficial or insincere in any way. It's just, I just think of it as truth. That what I write in my music cannot be false.
Is it never, or do you have to get uncorkers if you haven't written for a while, say, and just get a few little ditties off and then really get down to the emotional feeling?
No, if I write at all, it's by the time it hits the paper as a lyric, it's there, you know, and it's coming from somewhere real inside me. Then there are the tunes that, like I just wrote one, it's a real silly song, which is a stage I'm going through. I'm a very serious writer, and lately I've been writing all these really... Yeah, that's what it is, the cosmic consciousness. I've started writing these humor songs, which people like, so I guess that's nice. And it does take the weight off some of my heavier tunes in concert. But, you know, I'll be sitting down and I'll get this idea. The particular song that I just wrote is called I Remember the Boys. And I just got this flash about remembering what it was like growing up and how little boys were such a pain. And but the lyrics are very humorous. And I wrote another one recently, which is called I Don't Miss Being a Hetero, which is also funny. And I list everything in the world that I miss, you know, the Beatles, everything. But then, of course, the end line in every verse is, but one thing I don't miss, girls, is being a hetero. So, you know, that's my new trip, is these humor songs. What haven't I told you about the writing process, though?
You want to take a particular song through?
When I first wrote this song, it was just this musical piece. That was sort of strange, and I didn't know what I was going to do with it because it didn't. I mean, most of what I write doesn't fall into any real trite sort of categories of, you know, chord progressions that we're all accustomed to hearing and things. I try to be very strange, and also, I mean, those are the things that appeal to me when I'm writing, are lots of dissonance. This comes from my ethnic background too, is that. You know, Armenian culture is full of that Eastern dissonant feel, and I find that that's what appeals to me in my writing. This one song, Rainbow Woman, started off as this very Eastern, strange-sounding piece of music that I kept around for 2 years and never did anything with. It was just this part of a song. And so then this past month or so, I was really intent on writing a song about the ethnic experience for a woman. And of course, it made perfect sense, this very Eastern sounding strange piece of music. And so after 2 years, I put lyrics to this and added some more musical parts. And the form of the music is okay, I gotta think about my song here. The beginning of the song has this very, very Eastern feel to it. And I use my voice in a way that is a complete departure from what popular singing has come to be. Basically, I really define it racially. You can sing white, which is not very much vibrato, not very much force, a very smooth, even tone, basically, which I do sometimes for certain effects. And you can sing black or blacker, just, you know, well, we all know that the certain trills that, you know, have come from the blues and soul or whatever. And that's something that I think comes into my writing and my singing because I've grown up in America and I've listened to, you know, rock and roll and every other kind of music that's a rip-off of that black culture, and so that's in there too. But then there's this third thing that you don't hear very often, which is this Eastern influence. And so in this particular song, where it makes sense, I try to use my voice in that way, and I use notes and vocal trills as well as things on the piano that are that Eastern thing. Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of a nasal way of using the voice. But it's a very interesting combination of what I think of as white, black, and ethnic vocalizing.
Did you hear a lot of Armenian music when you were younger?
Yeah, well, you can't be Armenian without being subjected to a whole lot of cultural conditioning. Although my family was much less traditional than the great majority, and that's probably why I'm as hip as I am today. I guess, you know, I mean, I had to endure about 5 hours of church every Sunday all the way until I was 13. The church services are just unendurably long. I was forced to get involved in the music and the dancing. But a lot of it was enjoyable even then, you know, even though I was being forced. Rebelled against it as I got older. I mean, once I was able to free myself of it, the last thing in the world I wanted to be was, do you have to stop your tape?
Well, can you keep that thought?
Yeah. It's uncool to be ethnic, you know. I mean, I wanted to be white and hip like all the other kids. So, you know, it was something that I rejected for a long time, and it's only now, years and years later, that I can get in touch with it and see it as a really strong, positive thing.
Is it coming out in your music more and more, or is it just separate songs, or do you see it kind of...
Oh, yeah, definitely it's affecting everything. And I'm feeling more free about using my voice in different ways that aren't the traditional white ways of singing. I think I've been doing it unconsciously for a long time, but now I'm giving myself the space to explore it rather than repress it. And I've always had problems because I get a lot of positive reinforcement for singing white and negative reinforcement for exploring other ways of singing, other ways of playing, other forms, you know, and I still sometimes feel like I have to spoon feed my audiences with my heavier music because, you know, it's heavy, and I think being heavy is an ethnic thing. You know, I didn't grow up in a family where everybody was polite and quiet. I grew up in a family where everyone yelled at each other, and, you know, that's part of my experience. So it's difficult for women to sit in an audience and listen to a lot of my songs right in a row. And I can respect that on one level. I mean, some of my stuff's real emotional, real heavy, and people do need some relief from it. On the other hand, I think that we've been really brainwashed to listen to pap and, you know, just dog do music, and it's really bad because it means we never really get beyond this meaningless kind of crap, and I think it's important for women to say, okay, let's listen to this music that sounds strange, and let's let our minds flow with it instead of, you know, hearing the same old 1-4-5 chord progressions and...
Are you doing anything so you don't lose your audience because the music is different?
Yeah. Naturally, I'm real in touch with my audiences. You know, I can always feel the energy and if it's flowing well or not. I'll do a heavy song. If I get into the song, they usually can get right behind it. Sometimes it's hard for me to get into it because I'm worried about, wow, this is heavy. You know, are they going to be able to dig this? When I get behind it, they get behind it. But then after a real heavy song, I just naturally know, well, it's time to just be light and really talk to the women and make a lot of jokes.